Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. We will talk about some of the developments now in the swine flu outbreak. The big news this morning is actually a gaffe. Joe Biden, Vice President Biden, said this morning he advised his family to stay off airplanes and subways because of this new swine flu, a remark that forced the vice president's office to backtrack and prompted one airline official to complain about fear-mongering. Here is some of what the vice president told Matt Lauer on the Today Show this morning.
If a member of your family came to you and said, look, I want to go on a commercial airliner to Mexico and back within the next week, would you think it's a good idea?
I would tell members of my family, and I have. I wouldn't go anywhere in confined places now. When one person sneezes, it goes all the way through the aircraft. I would not be at this point, if they had another way of transportation, suggesting they ride the subway.
Oops. Biden, who has a reputation for off-the-cuff remarks, went beyond any precautions recommended by the federal government in that statement. In discussing his personal advice to his family, he simply said, that's me. So Joe Biden, I don't know when the last time he rode the subway was anyway, but I guess at least he's not going to be riding it anytime soon. Here's another thing that's more official than an off-the-cuff remark from the vice president that may be over the top. The Alabama High School Athletic Association has canceled all athletic events because of concerns about swine flu. This just in from the AP. Executive Director Steve Savarese said last night that he made the decision after consulting with the group's medical advisory committee. The decision means the Alabama State Track and Field Championships, set for Friday and Saturday at Gulf Shores and Troy, will be rescheduled. Other postseason competitions scheduled for Monday was also postponed. That includes baseball, soccer, softball, and golf. Savarese says the association hopes to resume athletic events by next Tuesday. Let's talk about these and other developments. There's about to be a news conference by the mayor here in New York City. Donald G. McNeil, New York Times correspondent. He's got one of the front page stories on this today. And Dr. Ian Lipkin, director of the Center for Infectious Diseases at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. Dr. Lipkin, thanks for coming back on twice in a week. Hello.
Pleasure.
And Donald G. McNeil from The Times, nice to have you today.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Lipkin, can I get your reaction, first of all, both to the vice president and to the decision of the Alabama Sports Authority?
Well, it's certainly not a measured response in either instance. You know, we have millions of people who need to get around this city, and the only way we do so is by subway. So if we were to avoid the subway, the entire city would shut down, and that would be chaotic. I think we've really blown out of proportion this whole problem. We don't truly know that this thing is going to be a major threat within New York City or in the United States. Now, yesterday, when the WHO raised the level to phase 5 in their pandemic alert period, this was perceived by many people as being, the end of the world, and we're only one step away from phase 6. When in fact that definition still means that they're just clusters of human to human spread, that the virus is increasingly adapting to people, but is not yet fully transmissible. Now, I would not be at all surprised if we move to phase 6, but that doesn't mean still that this is going to be a major health threat. Now, some people have begun to model this. There's a group at Northwestern University and another one at Indiana University that have done so independently with similar results. And their predictions going out a month is that we're going to be looking in the range of 1,000 to 2,000 cases in the United States. And that is working from a worst-case scenario.
One of the things that you just said was that it's considered not fully transmissible. What does that mean? Because one thing that does seem to be the case is that people are transmitting it to others with whom they're in close contact. For example, this is also new this morning, I guess, two cases on Long Island now in Suffolk and Nassau, and they both have connections to people at the St. Francis Prep School in Queens.
Exactly. That's why I said I would not be at all surprised if it moved from a phase 5 to a phase 6. I think there's clear evidence of human-to-human transmission. I don't think anyone disputes that. The question is whether or not it's going to accelerate or it's going to burn out. And as I mentioned earlier in the week, my major concern is not so much for North America, where I think that the change in seasons is probably going to be helpful from our vantage point. My worries really focus on what's going to happen in the southern hemisphere, where people are beginning to move into winter months, where the normal sorts of conditions for transmission and for growth of the virus are optimal.
Okay. Donald G. McNeil from The Times, the headline on your article today says, "Containing flu is not feasible, specialists say. They urge a strategy of mitigating effects." So who determined that containing this flu is not feasible?
Well, the WHO determined that it was not feasible to contain it, but they said that on Monday night. They had a meeting of their emergency committee that sets the pandemic levels. But in fact, I think it was probably obvious to a lot of specialists before that once you got spread out of Mexico, you got cases being transmitted in New York City, you got cases, what looked like cases, popping up in different countries around the world as far away as New Zealand. The reason they weren't able to confirm them is because the CDC and the Canadians, the only ones who had developed test kits for the virus, hadn't sent those test kits out, so they were suspect cases. But nobody could confirm them unless they flew samples back to the United States. But once it became obvious that it was spreading around the world, then Keiji Fukuda, who's in charge of these decisions along with the committee, said, look, there's no way to contain it. And that's typical with flu. I mean, it's not like SARS was largely spread through hospitals. The bird flu, the H5N1 bird flu we know about, has very, very limited human transmission. It appears in little clusters, often between people who are related to each other. It's not something that somebody would pick up, maybe in a bus station or something in Mexico, and then get on a plane to New York and transmit. So it was inevitable that they couldn't contain it. But that doesn't mean that means life as we know it is over. The flu is now just going to wash over us like the Black Death.
Well, it doesn't mean you do nothing.
Like it means you go to the next step, which is to try to mitigate it. You try to do the things that make sense to slow down the transmission.
Like what? What's considered mitigation?
Everything from washing your hands frequently and not sneezing on other people to shutting down Yankee Stadium, except that there are many, many, many steps in between those two. There are things
And
like
to be clear, they're not shutting down Yankee Stadium. You're not breaking a story here, right?
No. What I mean is that
the personal
steps you take yourself to keep from getting infected, the same steps you would take to keep from getting a cold or to keep your child from getting a cold, then have slightly higher steps, which is, if this virus is in the school, then maybe you shut down this one school, but you don't shut down the other schools in Brooklyn or anything like that. And then if it begins to spread further, you can shut down more schools. The idea is to slow down the spread of cases and buy more time. And nowadays, the advantage we have over 1918 is that if you buy time, you have time to make a vaccine, which they weren't capable of doing
right.
In 1918. We might buy enough time so that this can all be squashed.
1918, the year of the Spanish flu epidemic that killed 40 million people. You wrote in your article that many countries are still ignoring the advice to mitigate rather than try to contain. The globe is now a confusing welter of bans, advisories, and alerts on some pork and some people. What's the most extreme of those, in your opinion?
The most ridiculous thing I've heard of so far is that the Egyptians are killing huge numbers of pigs. This virus has not even yet been found in a pig, and if it was, it wouldn't make a difference. The danger is getting it from a human, not from a pig.
Well, kind of as an act of solidarity, Dr. Lipkin, and kind of as an act of journalistic skepticism, I went and ate dinner at a Mexican restaurant last night and ate pork. Was I taking my life in my hands?
No, you were taking no chance whatsoever as long as the pork was cooked. And as I said earlier, that has nothing to do with influenza. It has to do with trichinosis and bacteria and all sorts of other concerns. I mean, I completely agree with what's just been said. And mitigation is what we're looking at present. And I would add that in addition to having the capacity to make a vaccine, which we did not have in 1918, we also have antibiotics. And a lot of people, a lot of the pain and suffering associated with these diseases is associated with failure in supportive medical care. So we have, you know, ways in which we can treat respiratory failure and so forth. But the vast majority of the infections that we've seen in the United States have been mild. Now, yesterday on the Global Outbreak Alert Response Network conference, where we hear updates on, you know, what's happening here, there, and everywhere else, you know, as you've just said, there was no evidence, at least according to the Mexican scientists, that the virus has been found in pigs in Mexico. So despite the fact that you see, you know, people talking about an epicenter and looking for the pig, sort of like a scene out of Outbreak, you know, trying to find the host, the fact of the matter is we haven't found, quote, the pig.
In other words,
the smoking pig.
Well, and,
the pig
and they,
zero.
They, yeah. The pig zero. They officially renamed this H1N1 virus. And the media even is not supposed to, I think, call it swine flu, although everybody uses that shorthand. But Dr. Lipkin, are you saying that it's not even clear whether there is pig genetic material in this strain of virus?
No. I have an echo for some reason.
No, that was my fault. Sorry.
Okay. I'm not talking about, you don't see pig genetic material in the virus in any instance, because the pig genetic material doesn't get into the virus. But if you mean, are there sequences that are associated with swine flu, as defined by, you know, viruses that infect pigs? Yes, we do find those. But remember, when we initiated some of this investigation, I'm speaking in a royal sense, we were talking about avian components and flu components and human components and so on. So there are, you know, many people have begun looking at this, and at the present we're really just seeing swine components. But that really doesn't change anything. At this point, it's not swine flu, it's human flu. It's moving amongst humans, and there is no reservoir in the pig population that's going to solve, you know, by clearing this, is going to solve this problem. So what's happening in Egypt and what's happening in Indonesia and other places, I mean, just doesn't make any sense.
Donald, are you also covering the local angle here? Do you have any idea what the mayor's going to announce at this news conference momentarily?
I don't know what he's going to announce at this news conference. I'm writing an article about these genetics that we're talking about. My wife, who's a doctor, wants to call this the 2009 spring break flu, because it's that's the vector that's carried it around the world.
I guess so, or maybe those kids from Queens brought it to Mexico. Who knows? But you're reporting on the genetic material. So, do you want to go a little deeper on what Dr. Lipkin was just talking about?
I'm not a doctor. I only get to play one on the radio. You know, I mean, I don't.
Just
I
from a journalist's perspective, what are you learning?
As far as I can tell, from what I'm hearing, is the virus seems to be a combination of strains from North American pigs and strains from Eurasian pigs. Eurasia being Europe and Asia being actually just one big continent, and virus washes back and forth. Pigs don't go overseas very often. When pigs fly, they will, but it's not easy to import pigs from place to place because they carry a lot of diseases, so you have to have licenses to do it. But as I understand it, the North American swine flu virus has some human and some avian components in it already that are small parts of it. So there seems to be an argument going on the internet about whether or not the CDC was telling the truth about what they found in the virus or not. But the explanation seems to be that it's two pig viruses combined, but one of those pig viruses already had some human and avian elements in it. I'd love to know if Dr. Lipkin knows different.
I know, I say that's a fair representation.
Let me just play a clip of Governor Patterson before we go. He was also speaking this morning, so let's see what he's saying about the situation in New York.
I think just by numbers, you're talking about 100 diagnoses in a country of 300 million people. It would seem like overkill, but this is why it's not. This is a new strain of the virus, and whenever there's a new strain of a virus, there is an apprehension based on the fact that there may not be antibodies to the virus. And there have been serious problems in the world before when this kind of thing has happened. Now, even a new virus is often easily treatable if some of the protocols that we use with the regular influenza strains work. But since the virus is true, we don't know that they do work. And so we are erring on the side of extreme caution here.
All right. And maybe erring in some cases, but Governor Patterson laying out the rationale as clearly as anyone has for the actions that the government has taken and recommended. Dr. Lipkin, just before you go, on the temperature and the seasonal change that you were talking about before, I read somewhere that here in the New York area, most of the United States, as the season changes, the temperature goes up and the humidity goes up, and that would kill off the strain of virus for the season. But in Mexico, though it's hot, it's also dry, and that would allow it to live longer. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, this is when we spoke earlier in the week. I mentioned the fact that humidity was likely the more important factor.
Correct.
We talked about rainfall in Cancun and in Mexico City and how as we're moving into April, May, June, rainfall goes up a factor of tenfold. And the explanation,
including there.
Right. And the explanation for this effect, which was determined, as I say, by a group at Mount Sinai about a year ago, was that as water accumulated, the droplets became larger, and they just did not disperse as well. So the warm effect, was on virus replicating the respiratory tract, mm-hmm. and the capacity to create an aerosol that moved long distances
right.
was inversely related to moisture.
Dr. Ian Lipkin from the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health, director of the Center for Infectious Disease there. Donald G. McNeil, New York Times correspondent, who has one of the two front page stories on the flu today. Thank you both very much for doing this.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
And, of course, WNYC News will update you on whatever announcement the mayor makes this hour, as well as any other developments that you need to know. Brian Lehrer on WNYC will visit the E-House in a minute.